Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. The Soccer Championship of the World starts this week in 12 cities around Brazil. We always hear about last-minute rush-to-be-ready issues, but Brazil's story runs deeper. Preparations for the World Cup have brought out some of Brazil's biggest problems. Protests and strikes have ruled the streets where people are angry about the amount of money spent on stadiums still being built instead of schools, hospitals, transport. Brazilians love soccer. But that love's being tested right now, this hour on Point, the World Cup and the troubled country of the beautiful game, Brazil. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Do you know Brazil? The backstory here, why so many people have been in the streets as the World Cup readies for action. And who are you rooting for in the games? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Still last month, plenty of Brazilians in the streets. Here's a protest in Sao Paulo. Not happy about the way things going in Brazil as the world focuses on the World Cup. Here's one Brazilian at protest saying the amount of money the government's spending on the Cup too high, especially given the needs of many Brazilians, interpreted here by the Sydney Morning Herald.
We don't have hospitals, schools are closed almost every day, and we are building what here in Brazil? Stadium, when we don't have good health care or education. These are basic things for society.
Plenty of heat on as the excitement mounts for the soccer, the football, as they say, itself. Joining us now from Sao Paulo, Brazil, is Vincent Bevins, Brazil correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. He also runs the English language blog From Brazil for the big newspaper there, the Folha de Sao Paulo. Vincent, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Thank you.
And with us from Miami, Florida, George Qureshi, founder and editor of Howler magazine, American and international soccer magazine, also hosts the soccer podcast Dummy. George, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks a lot.
We will go to the soccer. After all, that's going to draw, what, billions of fans to pay attention over the next month. But Vincent, I mean, even today out of Sao Paulo, we're reading about police and subway workers, striking workers, clashing in a central commuter station, tear gas all over the place, driving 100 of them out, but only half the city's subway stations operating, greatly diminished service. And this is going to be important service for World Cup fans coming to town, Vincent.
Yeah, exactly. Today has been especially bad. Brazil has gone through chaotic scenes over the past 6 or 7 weeks or so as protesters and striking workers have shut down different parts of the country, including police dropping out and allowing crime to run rampant in one particular World Cup city. But over the past 5 days, there's been a metro strike here in Sao Paulo shutting down much of the transportation system in what is already a very congested and problematic city transportation-wise. And just coming to work today, I walked through a protest and a lot of workers are stranded. And this is the specific line that will be used to get fans to the game, which starts on Thursday here in Sao Paulo.
I mean, you've got games all over Brazil, big country, but a dozen different sites. So there'll be a lot of people flying around, playing in different parts of the country. But the stadium there in Sao Paulo, I'm reading here, is 12 miles east of central Sao Paulo. And fans presumably are expected to take some public transport to get there, Vincent.
Right. Well, I went to the last test match of the new stadium the Sunday before last, and it took me about 20 minutes on public transportation. When I got there, it turned out that the stadium wasn't finished, and no one will know if it actually is finished until the game happens on Thursday. But then when I tried to get there on Friday during this metro strike, it took me 2.5 hours on a combination of trains and taxis, and it was quite expensive. So if this metro strike is not resolved by Thursday, which I hope it should be, but if it's not, there'll be serious problems to get to the stadium.
Vincent, pull back to the bigger picture here. I think a lot of people expected this to be for Brazil, the World Cup and the Olympics, which are coming up just a couple of years down the road, to be the equivalent for Brazil of what the Olympics were for China, their big coming out party. After all, Brazil has had tremendous economic growth in the last decade. It has been celebrated very widely as a big success story. Are these games, the World Cup at least, still poised to serve that function of marking Brazil's sort of coming out as a big developed power, Vincent?
It's still possible, but what's certainly clear at this point is things are not going according to plan so far. So just to back up a little bit, in 2003, Brazil elected Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, the first left-wing president to take office since the fall of the dictatorship. And under his presidency, Brazil did very well. Around 40 million people rose out of poverty, and Brazil really powered forward onto the world stage. And when Brazil was awarded the right to host the World Cup now and the Olympics in 2016, it was widely seen as a recognition of Brazil's emergence as a global power. And they were going to use these two events to show themselves to the world as a new, developed, and modern country. Perhaps Brazil tried to put on too much and promised too much to its own people. Not only did they decide to put on a tournament in 12 cities rather than 8, which was the original recommendation, they also promised to the people of Brazil that this World Cup would be an opportunity to improve serious problems surrounding transportation as well as infrastructure in schools and hospitals. And most of the projects that were promised quite explicitly by the government simply didn't get done. And so this has generated a lot of discontent here. And so while it's entirely possible that by Thursday everything will work out for the international television viewer, which is mainly what this is all about. The World Cup is mainly a TV show for 99% of the world's population. While it might come together in the end, Brazilians are not really happy. And I was just in a very poor neighborhood yesterday, and you could still see the paint on the streets and on the buildings from the World Cup in 2010. They had traditionally decorate neighborhoods here extensively in green and yellow, and I said, well, where's the stuff for this year? And every single person told me the same thing. They said, well, you know what, we're just not so excited. We're not really happy about how much money went to these stadiums, and while I have to go and sit in traffic every day for hours, I have to go to the hospital, it doesn't really work. So at this point, at least, Brazil is not in the situation the government wanted it to be when it accepted these games in 2007.
I'm reading here one observer in Brazil saying the jump to modernity never happened, at least for transport, which is the big issue today, and the stadiums are a herd of white elephants. Wow, we're going to look more deeply at Brazil and what's going on here. It is the vivid backdrop with people, their attitude toward the games really changing the World Cup as it has approached. George, what about what goes on inside those dozen cities' stadiums in Brazil? You know, FIFA, the governing body for soccer, has had its own rash of problems lately. The accusations that Qatar, which has it next down the line, bribed its way into getting those games. The accusations that, or more than that, evidence of bribed referees within their system. How's FIFA looking as it heads into the World Cup games, George?
FIFA does not look all that great. It hasn't for a while. It's a very sort of top-down organization, and there's not a lot of transparency. They're based in Switzerland. They don't have much accountability when it comes to national laws. In fact, they often force countries to change or alter or create new laws as a condition for awarding a World Cup. So things are coming to light about not only Brazil, but also Qatar, Russia in 2018. They've done this, and it's not looking good for FIFA at all.
And what about the play that we're likely to see? Brazil, home of great soccer, the beautiful game, and one of the countries seen as a contender to win the Cup. Who's in the best position? What nation's teams?
There are some beautiful teams that are going to play, and I think it gets at the weird contradiction of the World Cup. I think that Vincent was totally right. The World Cup is a TV show, and so what we see on the television is going to be very different from what people who are there are experiencing on the streets. On the field, you know, Brazil looks very good. They have some wonderful players. Argentina also looks great. Germany is always a power. You know, and I think that the South American teams specifically have a great opportunity here because the World Cup is traditionally won by teams playing very close to their own time zone. So Brazil and Argentina look like very strong contenders.
Here's Argentina captain Lionel Messi, considered one of the best in the world, scoring a goal against Paraguay in a 2012 qualifying match for the World Cup.
En el medio del arco está Villar, ¿eh? Acaba la pulga, Messi, golazo.
Vincent Bevins in Sao Paulo saw something on the web, a takeoff on what we see everywhere these days, and it was the keep calm, and it was keep calm and beat Argentina put against Brazilian colors there. Do Brazilians see Argentina as their main foe in these in the Cup?
Well, Brazil, yes. Argentina is a rival mostly because of the proximity of the countries and because of the fact that they're so good. It's generally a good-spirited rivalry. But yeah, Brazil is very afraid of the threat that Argentina could pose and how embarrassing it could be if their main continental rival were to take the World Cup.
Is there any concern about, I mean, even today we're seeing tear gas and so about what's going on in the streets in Brazil affecting what goes on in the dozen cities stadiums across Brazil, Vincent?
Absolutely. I still think it's quite likely that things will go fine, but there's a number of scenarios you can imagine which could really throw a wrench in the celebrations. We have, but as you said, the country is very big. It's about twice the size of the European Union. These cities are very far apart from each other, and the airports are very underdeveloped. So you can imagine easily that someone could get trapped in the airports. The police here are widely accused of human rights abuses, and we're going to have probably some protesters that are quite intent on provoking the police. So if I can easily imagine another tragic scenario where the police were to overreact and hurt or even kill somebody, and that could really be a problem. And again, if these strikes aren't resolved by Thursday, this will be a huge problem for the opening ceremony.
Vincent Bevins in Sao Paulo, Brazil. George Qureshi in Miami, please stand by. Here's We Are One, the official theme song for this year's World Cup. Pitbull features. It also features Brazilian pop singer Claudia Leitch. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Eu chamo o mundo inteiro pra jogar, é pra mostrar que eu posso torcer, chorar, sorrir, gritar. Não importa o resultado, vamos extravasar.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Brazil's Ready or Not World Cup soccer tournament and the roiling domestic politics tensions behind the stadium crowds. Vincent Bevins is with us this hour from Sao Paulo, Brazil, Brazil's correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. George Qureshi is with us from Miami, founder and editor of Howler Magazine, American International Soccer Magazine. Politics all around this, and of course, games as well, matches as well. Here from Brazil's friendly match against Serbia Friday, Frederico Chaves Guedes, better known by his nickname Fred, scored the only goal for Brazil. And we will hear plenty of those long goals announced. Let's get a caller here from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Michael, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
It is beautiful. You're giving in the whole hour to the beautiful game, as Pelé, the all-time great Brazilian player, named it. And the world calls it football, only this country soccer, but I am excited. I am counting the days. I cannot wait till kickoff on Thursday. I have 8 different shirts of national teams in my living room. I'm going to put them on game day when those teams play. Italy, Brazil, Germany, you name it. It is going to be intriguing, fascinating, heartbreak, joyful, challenging. And a couple of words. You can hear my passion.
I do.
I understand the Brazilians and what they're going through and the domestic challenges. One word about FIFA, and I think you need to go into that more depth. One of the things that is so upsetting and abhorrent, FIFA FIFA demands that the profit they will reap from this World Cup, $2 to $3 billion, is tax-free. They take it home. What are Brasileiros left with? They are left with all these challenges after the World Cup, and they will go back to their lives and the difficulties, transportation, prices, and the rest. So, yes, those people need to be out on the streets, but they also need to celebrate the beautiful game.
Who are you rooting for, Michael? Or maybe you're rooting for all soccer. He's got a pretty wide open...
Oh, Tom, I am a German-born U.S. citizen, and as you know, Germany and the U.S. are in the same group.
Yes.
And they play each other. I can't wait. Which shirt do I put on, Tom?
I think you better wear two shirts, buddy. And be
great.
Careful.
Go football. It's wonderful.
There's the enthusiasm. Michael, thank you very much for your call. I really appreciate it. Hey, George, take us, Michael asked us to, and let's go there for just a minute, into the two issues that have come up recently. Qatar, what exactly happened there around them getting the games, and the referees? What happened there, and is there a risk of that coloring these World Cup matches as well?
So Qatar was up for the 2022 World Cup, which is the same one the U.S. was shooting for to host. And FIFA, you know, has a small executive committee that awards these tournaments. Qatar had what I think a lot of, you know, the consensus is that their bid was inferior in a lot of ways. There, you know, they didn't do all the due diligence that you know, was presented in the U.S. report. And it's come to light that there have been some bribes paid. You know, and if you follow FIFA, this is not all that surprising. You know, it would be surprising if something were actually done about it, I guess. But, you know, they're also now building a new city in Qatar that will be sort of a hub of the World Cup. It's a very small country. And, you know, the workers who are building that are largely Nepalese, I believe Filipino migrant workers, and they're being mistreated. They're dying, and the costs of this are enormous. And you know, we have no way to know how many people will suffer by the end of this if it keeps going. So, you know, that's Qatar, and it's sort of a separate issue from Brazil. There, you know, Brazilian society is now going through, you know, very different things. You know, that Vincent can talk about, but you know, forced relocations, things like that. But
there's, you know, the sort of bad odor coming off of FIFA as we head in here. And then the refugee issue. We're reading about $100,000 in a bag going to refugees in $100 bills. And what? Is that any chance of that coming into color what's happening in Brazil for the next month?
Well, this is something that I'm very excited to talk to Vincent about, actually. You know, I think that you've been comparing the World Cup to the 2008 Olympics in Beijing. I think that another good comparison is to the 2010 World Cup in South Africa, where a lot of people predicted chaos, high crime, and none of that really came to pass. Mm-hmm. I tend to think that Brazilians, for a couple of reasons, might be a little more prepared to take advantage of the spotlight that they're going to have now and with the Olympics. You know, in South Africa, sport is seen as sort of a unifying factor. The Rugby World Cup in 94 really brought the country together. And so I think people were maybe reluctant to use that as a mechanism for social change or for protest or disruption. I don't think that exists in Brazil, and I think that could be a factor.
What about referee corruption? We'll come to social change in Brazil, but South Africa has wrestled with this. That's the report that we read, was a bag filled with $100,000 going to referees in South Africa. Has that been cleaned up? That would seem absolutely necessary to get out of the way.
No, that's the tip of the iceberg, actually. That's part of a much bigger sort of existential problem for soccer globally, match fixing. You know, reports have been coming out. It's taking place in Europe. It's taking place in, as we saw, in South Africa.
But in the World Cup itself? Surely there's a cordon sanitaire around this, or not?
No, there are whispers about it. Nothing has been proven, but... And part of the reason for that, a lot of the match fixing takes place in lower league games, maybe, you know, because they can target players who aren't making quite as much money. The World Cup is, largely composed of the best players in the world who are all, you know, most of them are making millions of dollars in salaries. They're harder targets for, mm-hmm. for the fixers. And the fixers largely work for betting syndicates, I guess, in Singapore, in China, places where sports betting is huge. And, you know, there were, you know, people talk about men in sunglasses with cell phones at third tier Dutch league games, which, you know, are not the biggest games you'd think people are betting on, but you know, they're able to move the needle on those.
And so we've got those questions on the FIFA side, on the soccer side, as Brazil wrestles with everything going on around these games. President of Brazil, Dilma Rousseff, facing a presidential election this fall. So there are plenty of politics swirling here as well. In January, these were already hot issues. Starting last summer, they had big demonstrations, protests in the streets in Brazil. Here was the Brazilian president, Rousseff, addressing protests in Davos, the World Economic Forum.
My administration did not crack down on those demonstrators. Much on the contrary, we heard and we understood the voices of the streets. The demonstrators did not ask for a return to the past or the life of the past. Rather, they asked for progress towards a future of more rights, more participation, and more social gains.
Brazilian President Dilma Rousseff there saying we didn't crack down, but it did look, Vincent Bivens, last summer like it was a crackdown that really got people upset in Brazil. What has soured attitudes in Brazil so dramatically, so rapidly? I'm looking at the latest poll numbers. Dissatisfaction on almost every front up fairly dramatically just in the last year or two. What happened to Brazil's great run toward glory, Vincent? Why the sourness now?
Well, it all started last June when a very small group of protesters demanding that the price of a bus fare not go up was sort of brutally attacked by the police, and I was there and I got tear gassed. It was, by all accounts, out of hand, and that led a lot of Brazilians onto the street to affirm their right to protest and to speak out against the police. And as everyone came to the streets, all these other complaints sort of appeared out of thin air. These were issues that didn't exist at all, at least in the public conversation in February or March of 2013. And all of a sudden, everyone's in the streets saying, no, we want better schools, we want better hospitals, we want better public transportation, we want less police abuse. At the same time, though, President Rousseff, what she said in this speech is actually quite accurate, which is fairly remarkable. The comparison to Qatar is interesting, but we have to remember that Brazil is a democracy, and Rousseff is actually likely to be reelected in October. She's still leading in the polls by quite a large margin. And the things that people are asking for, we want more health care, better schools, better transportation. These are the kinds of things that you sort of want to see in a young democracy when people move from poverty into the middle class and they're saying to the government, you know, we're paying your taxes, we want things to get better. They're not actually asking for a radical change of course. They're actually asking for maybe a radicalization or an acceleration of the process that they've gone through over the past 12 years. So a lot of the people in the ruling Workers' Party are sort of happy this is happening, which is a sort of interesting contrast to a lot of the other mass-based protests we've seen around the world in the Arab world and over the last several years. And I just want to come back to the comparison to South Africa as well. It is entirely possible that everything will just come together as the games start. Mm-hmm. I mean, things have gotten very chaotic in the past week or two. Another interesting comparison is London in 2012. There was a lot of pessimism before the London Olympics in the summer of 2012. But as things got going, the country sort of came together in an unexpected way. So I'm not sure that's going to happen, but I think it's a distinct possibility.
I mean, we've learned to hold our breath almost wherever these games take place. And yet, as typically, when the great TV show for the world sets in, the rest of the things seem to recede. Brazil's have been very vivid here. Juliana in Framingham, Massachusetts. Juliana, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Thanks, Tom. I am originally from Brazil. I've lived in the U.S. for 20 years. I am not going to the World Cup in Rio, which is actually where I was born and raised.
Yeah.
Brazil has struggled with the Workers' Party for quite a few years, which is a party that's in power now for the most part. We had a major corruption scandal. It's widely known that FIFA has been exempt from all taxes when it comes to the World Cup. So they're going to pocket a ton of money. The politicians are going to pocket a ton of money. And all the infrastructure that Brazilians were hoping for is really not going to ever come to fruition. This is really just another situation that makes money for people who already have money. And another really sad point to me as a Brazilian is that there was none of this outrage back when we were thinking about or considering Brazil for the host of the games. You know, we have strikes of teachers, police force, doctors, nurses, going on all the time, and these are the infrastructure that we want, and you know, the money towards education and healthcare. We've been needing this for a really long time. So to wait till the summer before the games to start protesting is unfortunately characteristic of the Brazilian people.
But Juliana, what about the President Youssef saying, look, these protests are a sign of engaged citizens who have now become middle class, and so they see a brighter horizon. That's what they're calling for, and there's something good about it. What do you say to that?
That's obviously rhetoric. To me, that's political rhetoric. Mm. She doesn't care about what they're saying. This is just, you know, one person's opinion. But there's also the fact that a lot of these protests have become just totally mismanaged. I mean, it's one thing for you to protest. It's another for you to turn over cars and loot and you know, break down doors of stores and steal everything. I mean, it's complete chaos. And I think, unfortunately, again, as a Brazilian speaking, it embarrasses me and embarrasses, you know, the people with good conscience of the country that it's kind of a mess. And never should we have been picked in the first place to host the games. And what's happening now is what we knew was going to happen anyway.
Juliana, we've got that perspective, and I appreciate your call. Let me, if I may, go right to your hometown, Rio de Janeiro, in Brazil. Taylor Barnes joins us there. Journalist based in Rio, writes for the Christian Science Monitor, USA Today Sports. Taylor Barnes, thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom.
In the last year, there have been protests in lots of places. When people come out in the streets, Sao Paulo has it today, the police and subway striking, subway workers fighting there. When it happens in Sao Paulo, when it happens in Rio, who's coming out? Is it the real poor coming out of the favelas? Is it the middle class that's upset? Is it everybody? Who's protesting, Taylor?
That's a really great question. And as Vince pointed out, last year was sort of a moment when these protests really exploded and took off, especially around the Confederations Cup and also around the raise in the bus fare. And what was remarkable about that moment was that you saw indeed diverse sectors of Brazilian society. You saw someone who hadn't gone to a protest before, someone who wasn't part of a union, someone who wasn't part of some sort of civil society organization, indeed going to the streets. That said, in the months since, especially with the escalation of police versus protester confrontations, what you've seen is that the crowds have whittled down and you see a bit more of the hardcore politicized group who really have organized around the mega events. I went to a recent demonstration in Rio that led up to the mayor's office and had a nice interview with a public school teacher who was on strike. And she said, really, for us, this has been sort of a birth moment. This was a generation that was politicized around the mega events, around the 2016 Olympics and around the World Cup, because it really brought into so much clarity for us what our government spending priorities are. And so, like I said, in the past, you saw a much more diverse group, whereas now you're seeing sort of a core but very active and vocal group of activists in these protests.
Taylor, what are Brazilians anticipating over this next month? I mean, the games, the matches will begin on Thursday, and really for a month, Brazil will be hosting all this activity. Are people fairly confident that Brazil will settle down and let the games proceed, or are people anticipating strikes, protests, people in the streets, tear gas straight through the games?
Mm-hmm. That's a really great question. I think the sort of average Brazilian is expecting just their life to be very greatly altered. So in given different cities are declaring holidays for when the games are happening in their cities, when the Brazilian national team plays, it'll be a holiday. Just to give you a personal example, I recently went to the doctor and had a lab test, and they told me, your lab test will be delayed because of the holidays during the World Cup. I thought, really? Medicine is delayed? My goodness. So there is sort of that, for someone who is not particularly politicized, there is something of a just sense that for a month, their life is going to be greatly altered with these crowds coming through the city. And with respect to strikes, it's fascinating how close these strikes are getting to the events themselves. I was spent last week in the city of Salvador, which is in Brazil's northeast, which recently had a very dramatic police strike leading up to the World Cup, and its leader, who is a city councilman, was arrested, which was sort of interpreted by police across the country as, don't you dare strike during the World Cup. That would be a move too far. So it was quite interesting to see what the morale was amongst police there and how other police forces across the country have taken their cue from that city.
Brasil, pra mim. Cantar de novo, trovador.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about Brazil's Ready or Not World Cup soccer tournament and the roiling domestic politics and tensions behind the stadium crowds. 32 nations from all over the world being represented. Here's a sound from a World Cup qualifying match between one of the top seeds, Germany, and Austria in September of last year. Here Germany scores a goal against Austria. They go on to win the game 3-0.
Özil, schön auf Müller. Groß links startet Hövedes. Klasse Ball! Hövedes! Und...
It is definitely the international sound of soccer. Taylor Burns, journalist joining us from Rio de Janeiro in Brazil. Vincent Bevins with the LA Times with us from Sao Paulo. George Qureshi, founder, editor of Soccer's Howler magazine, joining us today from Miami, Florida. Plenty of response online here. A listener says, football is the greatest game in the world. It has to be to survive. FIFA's running it. Another says, it shows you the depth of Brazil's domestic problems, that even in the most soccer-mad country in the world, hosting a World Cup is not enough to appease the masses. Vincent, how about it? Taylor's not sure how this next month is going to turn out. Do you think Brazilians will settle in for the games and leave the streets, Vincent?
I think we'll really find out on Thursday. Either the protests will be effective at causing some sort of disruption to the games in the beginning, or they won't at all. So on Thursday, the opener in Sao Paulo, some groups whose slogan is "There will be no World Cup," are planning to disrupt transportation to the game. And it'll either work this week or it'll probably be fine. Is my personal opinion, because as things get going and as the games get more exciting, I think that the politics will recede. But at the same time, something could really get out of hand in the beginning, which would lead to some sort of mass discontent. Now, as Chandler mentioned, these confrontations with the police have become increasingly violent and dangerous. So the fact that we don't see thousands or even over a million people in the streets doesn't mean that discontent is not widespread. The last poll we saw showed that a little bit over half of Brazilians think that the World Cup is going to be bad for the country overall rather than good. And as I said, people might just simply sit at home and not cheer too hard, and that could be a damning enough indictment of the games on its own.
Let's go to Maria in Ashford, Connecticut. Maria, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yes. Thank you for the wonderful program. Okay. You're giving us an hour of soccer.
Good. Who are you rooting for, Maria?
I am a 70-year-old lady, and since I remember, I've been following the soccer games, but especially the ones every 4 years, like the World Soccer Game that is coming next Thursday.
Yes.
I am always to Brazil. But now, since I moved to this country, I go for the U.S. too.
Okay, so you got
choice,
two teams,
Brazil.
Two teams in the race, and who do you think is going to win the whole thing, Maria? Where's your...
You are asking me, being honest, I hope that my team wins, Brazil. But if it's not possible, well, I had to accept any other good one.
Maria, you've got great equanimity about it. At the same time, rooting for the U.S. and Brazil, that's perfect. George, take us to the U.S. here. It's in a really tough group, as they call it. And there's been a lot of hand-wringing, thinking, how does the U.S. possibly get out of its opening category here? Not everybody knows how this works. How is the U.S. position, George?
Well, Tom, first of all, can you please get Maria's information so she can become a columnist for us? Because she's my favorite caller you've had.
She's the best.
The U.S. is in a very tough group. It's considered the group of death, although, England, Italy, Spanish, and Dutch fans might have something to say about that. We play Ghana first, Portugal second, and Germany third. Usually in a World Cup, when the U.S. has gotten through the group stage, which has happened only a handful of times in the last 24 years, it's been because we've gotten 4 points, which is a win and a draw. And it's hard to see that happening this time, I got to say, because, the teams we're playing are so good. We're not at a particularly, great moment in the cycle of the U.S. national team. I think the best bet is getting a result, a win against Ghana, a tie against Portugal, and you can't expect anything against Germany. But on the other hand, we're playing them last, and there is the hope that they will have qualified already. And so maybe, you know, would field a weaker team and give us a chance to take a point from them.
There's been some controversy over who's going from the U.S. Here's the USA's Landon Donovan, who's not going to the World Cup, scoring a goal in a game against Mexico in September.
Oh, played it today, and Landon Donovan makes it two. It's that scoreline again. Columbus, 2-0, USA over Mexico.
George, what about the German-born U.S. coach Jurgen Klinsmann here and his handling of the team? Who's going, who's not, how he's trying to shape the American team?
I was very surprised, along with most U.S. fans, I would say, that Donovan was left off. He's been, you know, our star player for more than a decade now. And, you know, but I think Klinsmann is a very strong character. He's definitely the star of this U.S. team in this World Cup.
The coach.
You know,
this is
the coach, that's right. Well, he's also the only person involved with this team that has won a World Cup, or, you know, he coached Germany to the semifinals of the 2006 tournament. You know, so he's got some pretty good cred. But, you know, another coach might have come in and built his team around Donovan. So, you know, he's a very good player, very smart player, and he's versatile. He can play in the midfield or up top. So, you know, it's really a matter of personal preference. Donovan also took a bit of a sabbatical. And I think that ever since then, you know, Klinsmann has been a little bit wary of trusting him, you know, with mm-hmm. such a big role on the team.
Taylor, there in Rio, how are Brazilians looking at their own team and its chances in this World Cup competition?
Goodness, great question. Of course, there is something of a sense of hope and of optimism, and players here are referred to just by their first name or their nicknames because they are such characters. One thing that's quite fun here in Rio right now is that the World Cup is coinciding with annual, the month of June is when the Festa Junina happens, which is sort of a harvest party where usually you would decorate the street with little flags, colorful flags, and this year people are doing them green and yellow instead to also get into the World Cup fever. So there's definitely, of course, there's a sense of excitement, but that's largely overshadowed but with this pessimism about the event as a whole.
And Vincent, what about the economy, the other kind of competition that goes on here? Brazil was so hot for so long. It was all on the up, had 7.5% growth in the year 2010, not so long ago. What's happened with the economy there? If the bloom is off, why? Is it just part of the global pullback? Are there issues within Brazil that have slowed things down?
Half of it is the global pullback, yeah. So since 2010, which was the last year of Lula's presidency, Brazil has shifted from a high growth trajectory sort of to a middle or low growth trajectory, which is more in line with the way that things have been going for the last decade or two. So yes, half of it is that China has stopped needing so many of the commodities which Brazil supplies. But quite interestingly, the other half, if we want to oversimplify, is sort of the same issue surrounding the World Cup. Brazil, for bureaucratic, political, or other reasons, has been unable to upgrade its infrastructure in ways that have been badly needed since the beginning of the 21st century. And so the same things that have made Brazilians upset with traffic jams and poor schools have also slowed down the Brazilian economy. Costs are very high here. I think many Americans, Europeans will be shocked to find that Brazil is a country with about 25% of the GDP per capita of the United States, but things cost often much more, and a lot of this has to do with transportation bottlenecks. So to resolve Brazil's domestic political problem, which is a lack of enthusiasm for the country's infrastructure, as well as its international economic standing, it needs to find a way to upgrade infrastructure. And that's something that almost everybody here agrees on, even the government, even though they obviously have not been able to find a way to do it.
Why hasn't that happened? Brazil had, it seemed to have, a lot of money rolling in for a number of years there. Is it because of corruption, cronyism? I mean, the World Cup itself was supposed to come with a lot of public infrastructure. What got built, what didn't, and why the deficit?
That has been the subject of much conversation and debate over the past 3 or 4 years, because no one really thinks that the government didn't want to do this. No one thinks that this was a cynical lie to the Brazilian people, and they just didn't try. And they certainly had the political will to do it, and they had the money to do it. One theory is that this new constitution, which was only put into effect in 1988, has too many checks and balances. So bureaucracy can be suffocating for either the private sector or the government trying to create these large projects. And when there's there's too much bureaucracy and when there's a bad planning, corruption tends to pop up. In the case of the stadiums, there's been allegations that the construction companies that build the stadiums know that the government has to get this done. So they're in a very good negotiating position to say, oh, sorry, costs have gone up, we need more money. And this has been, there have been studies that have shown that this has been a symptom of most mega events around the world in recent decades, that the people building the preparations have been able to take advantage of this time frame, this time limit where the government is really under pressure to deliver.
Taylor, is Rio going to be left with a legacy of World Cup construction that will make life easier for people there, or are they looking at things that never got built?
Great question. So, for example, one really emblematic project for the World Cup is a bus rapid transit corridor lane, which would be the first and only public transit option to go from the international airport, which is quite on the edge of the city, to the city's downtown. And literally, it was inaugurated by the president just a few days ago. So it left sort of locals scratching their chins and feeling a bit frustrated, thinking something that we could have used all along is literally getting put together on the eve of the World Cup. And I passed by it just a few days ago, and you still see workers on the bridge. So there's definitely a sense that this is really a last-minute scramble. Another project that would have been that Dilma, when she was a minister for the former President Lula, promised was a bullet train between Rio and Sao Paulo, which is, as of now, still just an idea. So there's a certain sense that that these projects are really not getting done.
Vincent, we saw difficulty between the U.S. and Brazil over the NSA looking in on President Youssef's private communications. We've got Joe Biden, the vice president, coming down to watch the United States team play Ghana. What about U.S.-Brazil relations? Are they better as we head into the World Cup?
No, Joe Biden's hoping to patch that up a bit. Brazil and the U.S. were poised to really improve relations before the Snowden revelations. President Rousseff had been invited to an official state dinner, which is an elaborate, very formal event in the White House, and she turned that down as a result of the Snowden revelations. Brazil does not like to be feel or look bullied by the United States. We have to remember that Dilma Rousseff was imprisoned and tortured under the military dictatorship, which was initially supported by the United States. So Brazil has a real problem with the idea of the powerful gringo, whether it be the United States or FIFA, telling it what to do. Hopefully Joe Biden can smooth that over a little bit as time passes between the Snowden revelations and now. But things are still icy, and there's been a lot of things that have been put aside as a result of that that diplomatic freeze.
Hey George, take us to the soccer itself. We saw Spain come in as world champions in 2010. They had their tiki-taka approach, that touch, required a lot of endurance, lots of little passing all over the place. Is there a style that's dominant right now? Will it be Brazil's more beautiful games style, being that it's in Brazil? What's the hot, I don't know, style way of soccer right now?
Well, tiki-taka is still there. Spain is obviously 4 years older. They haven't really added a bunch of new key players. So you know, they're really they've won three major tournaments in a row, and three is really unprecedented in the modern era, and four would certainly be. You know, that said, that style comes very much from a club called Barcelona, and teams, other European club teams, have figured out how to beat Barcelona. And it's sort of, you know, in a way, it's by playing very similar to Barcelona, but also adding a little more brawn and a little more speed on a counterattack. So, you know, teams like Real Madrid and Bayern Munich have really had some success with this. And those players will be there. And Germany, you know, is very good at this. They're technically excellent and very fast and powerful. You know, but like I said, Brazil, you know, seems to have, it's just such a great combination of speed, and you know they're pretty solid in defense. They have just technically excellent players. Argentina as well. Their strikers are just phenomenal. They left off a guy named Carlos Tevez, who in any other country would be, you know, in contention for a starting role. You know, and because they have Lionel Messi, like you mentioned, Kun Aguero, who is Diego Maradona's son-in-law, just some really good players. There's nothing quite like tiki-taka on the horizon, but that was a very special moment in 2010.
And Vincent, what about just getting the players around Brazil? Big country, as you said. One of the U.S. games is all the way out in Manaus, way up the Amazon. Do they have flights cleared and ways to get them to the stadium in time for all the games, given the transport chaos we've occasionally seen?
Well, we just saw, I think it was yesterday, that the German team got stuck in a river in the state of Bahia. Only briefly, they had to take a barge across a river and they got stuck. But probably all the teams will be there just fine. The teams have the money and the organizational skills to get to the games. But what I'm more worried about would be the possibility of an airport shutdown, which strands some of the fans, which could really change the feeling inside the stadium and make, of course, people in that country quite upset.
And then we've got the Vuvuzela that we saw, the big horn in South Africa, making quite a ruckus. Everyone is talking about the Cachirola in Brazil. They're saying don't bring it in the stadium, maybe, but here's what it sounds like. Taylor, is this going to be the sound of the World Cup in Brazil? A million rattles in the stadium?
I sure hope not.
Is it a traditional instrument? Is it usually brought out at soccer games in Brazil?
No, this is not a traditional instrument, even though it reminds me a bit, I suppose, of the cavaquinho, which would be a bit more traditional. But of course, what would be the most traditional instrument of all would be to have large drums in the spirit of samba.
I don't think it's going to be quite large drums. Well, maybe it will be. Who knows? We'll watch as it all unfolds. Brazil, with all of its rise in recent years and its tensions and turmoil of the last year, right in front of us now as we head into the World Cup. Curtain goes up on Thursday. Taylor Barnes in Rio, terrific of you to join us today. Thank you so much for being with us from Rio de Janeiro.
Thank you, Tom.
George Qureshi at Howler Magazine. You're terrific, George. Let's talk again sometime. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it.
And Vincent Bevins in Sao Paulo, Brazil. Vincent, good luck getting around as all this takes off. Thanks for joining us, Vincent.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, we'll be watching. You may well be, too. It'll be a huge international audience as the World Cup kicks off. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.